The teaching of America's multicultural history has come a long way from the largely white, Eurocentric version students were taught for decades. Most of the progress has taken place at the university level. That's according to Adrian Dixon, this year's Black History Month speaker at Illinois State University. Dixon, who teaches at the University of Illinois, tells GLT's Judy Valente that the teaching of multicultural history still leaves a lot to be desired, especially on the elementary and high school levels.
The elementary through high school curriculum has kind of failed to really capture those moments where people have organized across race and class and gender, sexual identity, to again kind of push us as a nation to live up to our ideals.
What's missing in your view?
I think what's missing is a real robust kind of analysis or an examination for young kids and an engagement on interracial cross-class struggle. Labor movements, kids learn very little to nothing about labor movement struggles in formal curriculum. And, you know, Texas has all but rewritten U.S. history as it pertains to almost every group, literally, and in particular around slavery, describing slavery as essentially they were, you know, involuntary workers. That slavery was a worker program and slaves never got paid.
That's actually a term that's used, involuntary worker.
Yeah, it's involuntary worker. I believe they describe them as immigrants. And it was contested when Texas went through their revision of U.S. history for the state and what that curriculum would look like. It was certainly contested by, I have colleagues at the University of Texas at Austin, but that's what the state legislature and the Department of Ed had a hand in kind of crafting that, and that's what the official curriculum is. We just haven't kind of done enough to talk about, again, how different groups across a number of demographics have agitated for full citizenship, religious identity, you know, Catholics, agitated quite rigorously for curricula that fairly represented Catholicism, in part why we have such a vast Catholic school system in the U.S. was a response to the distortion of Catholicism in public education early on in our founding. The same with people who identify as Jewish, who follow the Jewish faith, that schools didn't allow for, they had to agitate to have religious holy days off. So, I mean, we've had this kind of contested history that has played out in schools. Our students tend not to learn about that. And so my bigger critique is that when students and young people want to organize, they don't necessarily know the history of that, of how groups have organized and have pushed against oppression and distortion of history and marginalization.
You mentioned Texas. What examples do you have of Illinois? What have you seen in Illinois? Because you visit a lot of schools in Illinois.
I mentioned Texas in part because Texas and California and Florida are very influential in terms of the social studies curriculum, and also actually just in textbooks in general. Illinois, fortunately, has it gone the extreme of Texas. Texas is an anomaly, and it always has been.
One of the other critiques that you make in some of your writings is that teachers are not well trained to teach about the cultural history, the multicultural history of our nation. What are the drawbacks, deficiencies that you see, and how do we need to deal with them?
It's just a challenge of preparation in general. Elementary teachers essentially have to be specialists in every subject matter area. So if you imagine as an undergraduate in a university setting to be an expert and have expert knowledge in math, science, social studies, language arts is a heavy lift, right? Some middle schools teachers specialize, but it requires a more in-depth study of particular content areas. And I think that's a limit of just the preparation model. But coupled with that, the way that we invest in teachers, we leave it up to school districts then to figure out what professional development and ongoing support teachers need. And often content area development is not as robust as it could be for a host of reasons. Most of the challenges are structural. It shows up in what they're able to do in the classroom.
You point up an interesting example where you go into a classroom where a teacher is talking about John Brown, the abolitionist, yes. and says that John Brown was biracial.
Yes.
And that was clearly not correct. You point that out, that is not correct. But that was what was being taught to these students.
It was a school in North Carolina.
Okay. So what other glaring examples have you run into?
Well, some of it is around what I think is an over-reliance and a kind of fixation with testing really stifles the amount of time that teachers have to focus on content. And because I think teachers do a Herculean job of trying to avoid teaching to the test. And I would say that it's really challenging for them to avoid that, in part because the test drives so much, right? It drives the perception of quality of instruction, the quality of the school, and the very intellectual capacity of students. Teachers who are able to kind of balance a fidelity to their content area and not be swayed by only covering what's on the test is a huge testament, again, to their kind of fortitude, because it's difficult not to do that. And so I have witnessed, though, teachers who have tried to balance with test prep. So in particular in urban schools, who are under an incredible amount of pressure to perform well on standardized tests, there's an inordinate amount of time spent on test prep that takes away from content.
I want to move now to another topic that you write about, mm-hmm. And that is the Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. organization group.
Yep.
You call it a moment and not a movement, and mm-hmm. you seem to be semi-critical of Black Lives
yes.
Matter. What are your issues there? Why is it not a movement?
As a university professor, I'm happy to see young folks attempting to speak back to what they see as oppression and inequality, racism, and all the other isms. It makes me happy to see some political activity. The movement building piece is a much longer process, and I don't know that we're there yet.
Yes, you quote Angela Davis as saying, "A movement takes years."
Yes, decades. So I was fortunate enough to, and she just actually wrote a book about this, but to hear her talk about, you know, she's over 70 now and is still working on building the movement. And a liberation movement for people who are disenfranchised in the U.S. And so it's a longer arc. And I think we're quick to call any kind of organizing a movement, in part because of our ignorance of how people have organized early on in our history. And in part, again, because we don't necessarily talk about the struggles of labor and the struggles of people of color and the struggles of the LGBTQ community and gender movements, ethnic minority movements. We just don't, that history is kind of glossed over if it's ever really addressed. And so whenever we see people agitating and protesting and speaking back and demanding change, we immediately call it a movement. And I don't know that we really have that kind of when I think about the civil rights movement, it was very organized, and there was a real network that people were kind of plugged into that had coordinated efforts, and there was a communication system. I think that that's emerging. I just don't think it's there yet, and so that's why I'm hesitant. But I'm hesitant to say that we're fully in a movement.
Do you see Black Lives Matter as being a contributor right now to the social discourse on race, a major contributor?
I think they are important. I think that these issues have never kind of fallen off the table. I'm encouraged when I see young people organizing because there's really no incentive for them to do that. And I say that as an educator, because I know the struggles that we have in curriculum, in particular around getting these issues as a part of the official curriculum. So the fact that people are, that young folk are motivated to organize is always encouraging. And I think it has created a public discourse. I think what's interesting is the way the mainstream media, and I'm just a little skeptical sometimes when when things that are supposed to be radical become the darlings of our mainstream discourse, because generally radical agitation isn't a popular idea. But I think that certainly social media has helped to broaden the platform for Black Lives Matter.
U of I Professor Adrian Dixon speaking with GLT's Judy Valente via Skype. Dixon's presentation, Race, Protest, and the Challenge of Multicultural Education, is tomorrow at 7 p.m. in the Prairie Room of the Bone Student Center. Her talk is free and open to the public. You're listening to GLT.